Well, good morning, TNC family, from my home to wherever you are on this third Sunday in November. I want to begin by sharing and saying with you the words of the psalmist in chapter 100. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name, for the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. Amen. Well, I was born in Tacoma Park, Maryland on November 20, 1971 at 6:57 a.m. And no joke, I was delivered into this world by a Lord. Not the Lord, but by Dr. Doug Lord, who is my family's physician at the Washington Sanitarium and Hospital, which means, as I'm recording this on the afternoon of November 19, 2021, in just a few hours, it'll be my 50th birthday. In the words of Eleanor Roosevelt, older than I've ever been, and younger than I'll ever be again. Half a century on the planet, TNC, which is a good thing because, and I don't know who pointed it out first, but it's true, statistics show that people who have the most birthdays live the longest. And some of you might be thinking, half a century, David, that's getting up there. But if you're thinking that, then just know you're no Einstein. Because he'd say, it's all relative. And if you ask me today, am I feeling old this weekend? No, I'm not. And if you ask me, am I feeling nostalgic? Not especially. And if you ask me, am I feeling like halfway there? Nope. Maybe a third. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to beat my mid-20s friend Chase in one-on-one basketball for at least another decade. And if you ask me if I'm feeling like coasting or settling or slowing down, not in the least. I'm feeling more connected to the words of the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 than in 2 Timothy chapter 4. He tells Timothy there, I've fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. And I'm certain there will be a time when I want that to be how I'm feeling. But it's not this weekend. This weekend I'm feeling 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58, where Paul writes to his dear friends, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is never in vain. And how I'm feeling today is, I'm ready to do some more abounding, but I don't want to be flippant or dismissive and miss the opportunity for reflection at age 50, because it's a particularly good birthday to reflect. And so today, for this podcast, I want to share with you some reflections that I'm having at age 50, and particularly some things rooted in the scriptures that I believe have helped me and are helping me continue to grow up as I'm growing older. Because as many have pointed out, growing old is mandatory, but growing up in things like wisdom and joy and peace and purpose and so on, growing old is mandatory, but growing up is optional. And many people think that what's written in the Bible has mostly to do with getting people into heaven when they die. But most people who think that are the people who aren't reading the Bible, because the Bible is actually primarily about, as Dallas Willard liked to say, getting in on heaven before you die, growing up in the life of heaven before you die, experiencing God's kingdom on earth as in the heavens, an actual possibility, one that Jesus himself taught us to pray for. In other words, we can get in on the life of heaven now if we'll just grow up. And so I want to share now just three things from the scriptures that I believe will help all of us continue to grow up in the fruits of God's kingdom before we die. Three truths that, as I turn 50 and reflect on my life, three truths that I believe have helped and are helping me continue to grow up in my life of faith. And here's number one, truth number one. The pupil is greater than the critic. The pupil is greater than the critic. And there's a true story from my life that reminds me of this. Most of you will not know this, but it's true. I have been yelled at the Vatican, the home of the Pope. Yep, yelled at by an employed agent of the Pope. It happened about 25 years ago when I had the opportunity to travel to Rome and to the Vatican Museum. In the months before my trip, I did a ton of reading as a way to prepare for the trip so I would be able to appreciate more of what I would see, a reading adventure that included learning about artists whose paintings I would see in the museum. The Vatican has some of the world's greatest artwork, Da Vinci, Michelangelo, Caravaggio, Raphael, and more. And the one painting that I became most interested in seeing was Raphael's School of Athens, probably the most famous fresco of the most famous Renaissance painter in the world, or one of the most famous Renaissance painters in the world, because the painting is famous not only for its brushstrokes, but for its depiction of some of the most famous people in the history of Greece. The two central figures in the School of Athens are philosophers Plato and Aristotle, but also in the painting are Epicurus, Pythagoras, Socrates, Alexander the Great, Zoroaster, Ptolemy, and more. And even Raphael painted himself in the school, looking directly at the viewers just over the left shoulder of Ptolemy. And it includes very clever things like the figure of Plato in the painting has the face of Leonardo da Vinci. Anyways, I was excited to see this painting, but don't ask me how it happened, but it did. I was walking out of the final hallway in the museum when I realized I hadn't seen it. Like somehow I was distracted by the overwhelming view of the Sistine Chapel or the crowds or the friends I was with. And so I made a decision in that moment as I was exiting. I said to my friends, "Wait outside, I will be back in a few." And I began running backwards against the flow of people through the Vatican Museum to see Raphael's School of Athens, running to the School of Athens, running to school, and that's when a Vatican guard yelled at me. I'll never forget it, and I tell you that here because I think it's a great metaphor for being a pupil of not a Renaissance painting, but for 21st century life. And the question is, TNC, are you running toward learning? Are you running towards wisdom? Because the pupil is greater than the critic. Something Solomon is getting at when he says in the scriptures, Proverbs chapter 1, "Let the wise listen and increase in learning, and the one with understanding obtain guidance." And in chapter 10, quote, "The wise are glad to be instructed." Chapter 12, "The way of the fool seems right to them, but the wise listen for advice. Chapter 18. Intelligent people are always ready to learn. Their ears are open for knowledge. And it's not just in the Proverbs. Peter, the great apostle and friend of Jesus, longing to help those he loves, writes in his letter, chapter 5 and verse 5, "You who are younger, seek out the counsel of your elders and clothe yourselves with humility toward one another." And of course, Jesus himself said, recorded in Matthew chapter 11, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, because the pupil is greater than the critic." I was watching the Baltimore Ravens play football the other day. Their quarterback is Lamar Jackson, the youngest MVP in NFL history. And he loves the game, kind of like a fan loves the game. I remember when Tony Gonzalez, former Falcon tight end, said on the set not long ago that about 5% of the players playing the game live for the game, and the other 95% play for the money. Lamar lives for the game, and he is known for being one of the most coachable players in the NFL. He's humble. He recognizes that he has weaknesses, and he's honest about it. And the other day after a game, a reporter asked him a question. He was on the field, and he said, "I've got to get better. I got to get bigger and better, take fewer hits, play better from behind." Which, by the way, TNC, are things the critics have said about him. And I love that about Lamar. Because think about it, it takes an extremely secure person to agree with their own critics. But there's this link between his greatness and his teachability, because the pupil is greater than the critic. And one thing I believe wholeheartedly as I turn 50 this weekend is that the wiser and healthier you are, the more places and people you will learn from. Kind of like a huge tree. Think of a large oak tree, and now imagine its root system with roots everywhere. And what does the root system allow the tree to do? Answer, gain nourishment from places everywhere, all kinds of places. On the other hand, think of a smaller tree, and now you'll be imagining a smaller root system with fewer sources of nutrients. Because the more you grow up, the more you'll become a pupil of sources everywhere. C.S. Lewis, in his famous book, Screwtape Letters, which, by the way, is a great book, but a somewhat challenging one to read because it's told from the perspective of a devil, old Uncle Screwtape, who writes letters to Wormwood, a junior devil, just in training to become evil. Quote, "My dear Wormwood, if a man can't be cured of church-going, the next best thing is to send him all over the neighborhood looking for the church that suits him until he becomes a taster and a connoisseur of churches, because the search for a suitable church makes the man a critic, where the enemy, God, wants him to be a pupil. And this attitude, the attitude of a pupil, is the most hostile to our whole policy." And the senior devil Screwtape goes on, "There is hardly any sermon or book which is not dangerous to us if it is received in this temper." Do you follow that, TNC? C.S. Lewis agrees the pupil is greater than the critic, and no matter how old you grow, you will never grow up if you don't embrace this reality. The pupil is greater than the critic. And so my question, and yours, is how big is your information net? Like, do you pay attention to young and old, rich and poor, conservative and liberal? Do you read broadly across all spectrums? Do you take in news from multiple sources? Do you listen more than you talk? I'm telling you, I take this seriously. Those of you who know me well know I try to be a huge sponge of information from all over the place, which is why I read mega conservative author Ben Shapiro. At the same time, I listen to the HBO podcast Real Time with Bill Maher. It's why I read from the National Review and Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post. It's why I read N.T. Wright and Dale Allison and Ibram X. Kendi and Gretchen Rubin and George Will and Barack Obama and Brian Greene and Barbara Brown Taylor. And it's also why I read the older authors. Because some folks, you'll discover, are chronological snobs. Oh, it's an old book. I won't read that. It's why I subscribe to 7 podcasts that I listen to on my walks every day. TNC, it's because in my experience, you can grow old, but you'll never grow up if you miss this truth. The pupil is greater than the critic. So how big is your information net? Because in my 50 years, I've come to see that I just don't think you can be steadfast, immovable, and abounding in the work of the Lord with a small critical mindset. Which leads to number 2. The second main truth I lean into as I turn 50 and reflect on my life, the second truth that I believe has helped me and is continuing to help me grow up in my faith in life. Number 2, effort is greater than talent. Effort is greater than talent. Carol Dweck, a psychologist at Stanford, has spent more than 30 years carrying out systematic research into why some people realize their full potential while others get nowhere near it. And in one of her best-known experiments, she presented a class of university students with an assignment full of challenging tasks. And after the students had completed the assignment, one of the groups was praised for its effort, while the other group was complimented for their natural intelligence. And then, in subsequent tests, Dweck observed an undeniable pattern. The students who were praised for their natural talent and intelligence were distinctly passive and reluctant to carry out new, more challenging assignments, and their test results got worse and worse, while the students who were praised for their effort kept improving. Harvard business professor John Kotter writes in his book, A Sense of Urgency, quote, "With success comes a major problem, keeping up a sense of urgency needed to accomplish a bigger goal or to sustain a high level of performance over time." I listened to an interview recently with conservative columnist George Will, Pulitzer Prize winner, who just released another fascinating book, and he was asked about how he gets inspiration for writing day after day, year after year, for 50 years. And his response was to quote Peter DeVries, quote, "I write when I'm inspired, and I see to it that I am inspired at 9 o'clock every morning." And Tom Brady, and yes to my Taco Mac friends, I'm mentioning Tom Brady again. Brady was on the Monday Night Football broadcast with Peyton and Eli a few weeks ago. He had played the day before. It was the Sunday that he threw his 600th career touchdown. And he comes on with Peyton and Eli, and there's a guy on the field who makes a play, and Tom Brady goes, "Oh, that's the rookie cornerback from Stanford. He's a really good player." And then he goes on to talk about some of this rookie's strength as a cornerback, because the Bucs were playing that team the next weekend. So think about it. This is the greatest quarterback of all time, coming off his 600th touchdown pass. He's 45 years old. And if I were to say, "Hey, do you know what Tom did 12 hours after the win?" Nothing. Not a single thing. They won the game. He went out with his family. He stayed up late, watched some Netflix, drank a glass of wine, slept in. If I said that, no one would have said, Tom's just not working hard. You'd have been, he deserves it. He's balanced. Take a deep breath, Tom. Worry about next week, maybe on Tuesday. But that's not how Brady is wired. At age 45, he might not have the arm strength or flexibility or speed or talent he once had, but he has a surplus of effort. He said the other day, if you're going to beat me, you better dedicate your life to this because I have. And at this stage in his career, it's easy for players to have greater talent than he does, to be faster and stronger and to recover more quickly. But it's borderline impossible to outwork him. Because every time you are working, he's working. And the second you say, hey, I'm taking a moment to put my feet up and take a break, he's still working. And I'm not trying to say I have to be that way, TNC. I'm just saying effort really is superior to talent. You know, a lot of people say that the future is a complete mystery. You either catch a break or you don't. You either are in the right place at the right time or you aren't. You were either born with it or you're not. Whatever will be, will be. But the reality is, the person who has the most to do with what happens to you is you. And the Apostle Paul says pretty much the same thing in his letter to the church at Galatia. Paul writes Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7, you will always harvest what you plant. Imagine Paul talking to you now, TNC. You will always harvest what you plant. Now, we're in this Thanksgiving season where we celebrate the harvest and life's abundance. So now listen, Paul says that your life and your future are like an empty field, a piece of dirt, given to you to do whatever you want to do with it. And if you plant potatoes, you can pray for corn all you want, but you'll likely still get potatoes. And if you plant kale, you can claim in faith a future of strawberry fields, but I hope you like kale. Because you will only harvest over time from the seed that you plant today. Now, there's always exceptions, but come on, mostly your current situation can be traced back to seeds you planted or that were planted for you, and then you watered and weeded or tended to, or you didn't. This is what Paul is saying. It's the same Paul says, if you want to reap a harvest of joy, then you've got to plant the seeds of joy. And if you want to reap a harvest of peace, then you'll have to plant the seeds and water and make the effort to nurture peace. And if you want to reap a harvest of friendship, then you'll have to plant the seeds of friendship and so on. And after you plant the seed, you've got to keep watering and developing the seed over and over and over again. But here's the great news. Effort is greater than talent. And in my experience, you can grow old, but you'll never grow up if you miss this truth. I just don't believe you can be steadfast, immovable, always abounding without training and effort. Effort is greater than talent. Which leads to number three, the third main truth I lean into as I turn 50 and reflect on my life. The third truth that I believe has helped me and is continuing to help me grow up in my faith and life. First, the pupil is greater than the critic. Second, effort is greater than talent. And number three, love is greater than everything. Love is greater than everything. It's greater than physical health. Because in the Bible, the strongest guy physically was a guy named Samson, and his life was a disaster. and love is greater than financial health, because Jesus told a story about a rich guy who had his best financial year ever, more income, tore down his old barns, built up bigger ones, but he ends up dying that same year. Someone else gets all his stuff, and God calls him a fool. Rich in coin, but poor in character. Great stuff on the crust, but slim pickings in the core. And love is greater than career success. Because the most successful guy in Jesus' day was a guy named Herod, and he was a business mogul, but people were objects at his whim to advance his goals. And he died lonely and paranoid. And love is greater than knowledge, because the smartest guy in the Bible, named Solomon, he ended up depressed and sad and alone. And in about 53 AD, the Apostle Paul, he's writing to the church at Corinth. And in chapter 13, he says these amazing words. Paul says, quote, "If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing." And TNC, as I turn 50 this weekend, I just feel really clear that though I have a podcast as popular as Joe Rogan, and though I tweet like Taylor Swift, though I have more Instagram followers than Cristiano Ronaldo and fly to space with Elon Musk, though I get a BA from Harvard and a PhD from Yale, though I own major shares in Snapchat and Amazon, though I have great athleticism and low body fat, though I set records for my philanthropy and drive a zero emissions car that runs on compost and is endorsed by Marty McFly and Dr. Emmett Brown, if I don't love. And the thing is, I don't mean this to be some statement of theology. Listen to me. This is a statement about reality, about the life of heaven on earth. Paul is saying that there is a force that will determine the success or failure of your life more than any other force, and it's the force of love and the extent to which you grow in it. Now, ironically, you would probably find that it spills over into other areas like your physical health and financial health and relational health and so on. But love is the key force, and love won't just bring you joy and success and peace. It's the force that will most radically help those around you too. Because the more you love, the more possibilities you create in the universe for others. And history teaches us this, friends. History teaches us that things are not necessarily going to be one way or the other, but rather that individual initiative can make a difference. That ideas and actions have consequences and can change the course of history for the better. And there's just no greater force than love. Love is greater than everything. I remember several years ago being fascinated with the life of Winston Churchill, reading from that famous 3-volume set by William Manchester. Some of you will know that when Churchill was a baby, one of the sad things was his father and mother had very little time for him. He was generally neglected and ignored. They did not spend very much time with him at all. His own father, in his own words, thought Winston was retarded. His mom was more interested in society and carried on with the affairs of the social elite. And so Winston had a nanny, Mrs. Everest. He called her Woom, W-O-O-M, the nearest he could get to saying woman. And it was Woom whose fireside Churchill was comforted by. It was Woom whose shoulders he cried his tears on. It was Womb whom he felt the most love from. And when Churchill died, it was 70 years after she died. 70 years. But when Churchill died, it was her picture that was on the table at his bedside. And it just makes you wonder, doesn't it? Because of the role Churchill played in leading England to stand up to Hitler and Nazi Germany. What the history of the West, what the world would have been like if Mrs. Everest, if Womb did not love Winston, see something in him that nobody else did. Because there just is no greater force than love. A theme that runs throughout the entire story of the scriptures. For God so loved the world, loved you, loves you. And when God's love enters your heart and mind, fear is about to be evicted, hope is about to be elevated, and the status quo is about to be energized. Get ready to abound. And as I turn 50 a few hours from now, I can tell you, I'm not feeling complacent or content or like coasting. I want to pioneer into new areas of God's goodness and work alongside you. And I want love to be our fuel. And I want us to be humble pupils of one another. And I want us to wake up every day with a spirit of great energy and effort. Because I want the story of my next 50 to be a story aligned with 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58. Be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is never in vain. Let's pray. God, I pray now for each person listening. I pray that they would know your love. I pray that they would feel your love from this TNC community. And I pray that that love would energize and encourage and elevate them as they live and work and play. And now, TNC, on this Thanksgiving week, may the Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.